It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. And welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our guests, our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast and our most recent op-eds. Go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. I do love hearing from you. A big show planned for you today. This is Veterans Day week, and every day today in the third and fourth segment, we will be featuring a veteran. Today, we will be talking with Orson Swindle, and he is a decorated Vietnam prisoner of war. He was the commissioner of the Federal Trade Commission of the United States from 1997 to 2005, and he had previously served as Assistant Secretary of Commerce during the Reagan administration. You will not want to miss this. It is going to be an amazing show. Second segment, we'll be talking with Alfredo Ortiz, and he is the president and CEO of Job Creators Network, and they are always looking for policies to help small business, and basically that means get government out of the way, and he's with Job Creators Network. We'll be talking with him. Happy birthday to the United States Marine Corps. November 10 is their birthday, and thank you to all of you Marines out there, which takes us to our quote for the day before we get into everything else. It says, all men are created equal, then some become Marines. What do you think of that, Producer Steve?
Oh.
Being an Air Force guy?
Well, you know, there's military
competition
rivalries, and man, that one really hits the.
I was DuckDuckGoing different Marine quotes, and I thought that was a good one. Always like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, and that was Producer Steve that you heard there. Zach, Keith, Patty, and Charlie, the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. And thank you to each of you listeners. You're treasured, you're valued, you have purpose. Strive for excellence today. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, your body, your families, your businesses, all those things. Take good care of those. At the bottom of the hour, we will be talking with Jason McBride as well on news of this, of these vaccines. I find the timing so interesting, less than a week after the election. But the market thought that was really good news yesterday, and so we'll be talking with Jason about that at the bottom of the hour. My friends, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism has to come down to force because the ideas don't really work. And I just saw before we went on the air that Fox News has asked House speakers, this Pelosi's office, multiple times if she would renounce socialism amid a deepening rift with other Democrats, and she refused. That is absolutely astounding. With that, Steve, you have a soundbite for us from Senator McConnell that you think is important that our listeners hear. Go ahead and do you need to set that up anymore?
Well, he's still the minority leader of the Senate, correct?
The majority.
I would trash that.
You
majority.
Be careful,
majority. Yeah, he's going to get me for that. Anyway, their session opened yesterday, and he spoke. Now, when he makes reference to Mr. President, he's talking about the president of the Senate.
Now, more broadly, Mr. President, let's not have any lectures, no lectures about how the president should immediately, cheerfully accept preliminary election results from the same characters who just spent 4 years refusing to accept the validity of the last election and who insinuated that this one would be illegitimate, too, if they lost again, only if they lost.
I love that. And further down, because we can't do it in the interest of time, he specifically mentioned both Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi in comments that they made in September and October, which I think you and I discussed last week, comments that were designed to get the American public ready for what we're seeing right now.
Steve, I was thinking about it on the way in. You and I always have a pre-show call, and then we normally open the day with a prayer as well. And you mentioned the word propaganda. And that is what I was thinking about as well, is the American people are really being fed a propaganda right now. Instead of these Democrat leaders actually wanting to make sure that we get down to the truth, that we have fair and just elections. Once it looked like that there's becoming this groundswell of evidence that there has been election fraud in a number of these key states, makes you also wonder if there could be election fraud in many of these other states as well. But we'll talk about the key states. And we had Richard Barris on last week with Big Data Poll. And he said in 2016, he gave his colleagues in the polling industry kind of the benefit of the doubt. And I'm paraphrasing, my friends, the benefit of the doubt that they were so far off. And then in 2018, once again, more questions, but again, benefit of the doubt. This time he said that they were, I think he's convinced that they were not telling the truth. They could not be off that far. When we asked him if, in fact, having these polls off so much, if that was voter suppression, his answer to that was yes. So we have seen the collusion, if you will, the colluding of Democrat leaders, bureaucrats, the FBI, the Department of Justice, the NSA, big data, big tech. All of this had gotten to the point where it looks like we get to election day and Donald Trump is winning. He is in a situation where is going to win. We go to bed on Tuesday night and they stop counting in many of these key states in the middle of the night. And then they have these vote dumps. And statistically, Patty had found this. A lot of people are starting to go through this data. And statistically, it is almost impossible what has happened to switch those states to a Biden victory, Steve. We are going to get to the bottom of this. And so don't you find it interesting then Saturday morning, as more and more information is coming forward, that all of a sudden the kings in the mainstream media decide that they will anoint Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as president and vice president. The timing is absolutely astonishing. And now we have the propaganda. Basically, you hardworking, everyday Americans who the elite has no allegiance for, they just want to control us. They want to take the fruits of our labor and use that for their programs. And they want to say, just sit down and shut up, and that's it. I find that a real big bit of propaganda, Steve.
Well, sometimes, well, more often than not here in the last, say, 20 years, when you see something going down like we did Saturday morning, the coordination.
Good point.
Between all these entities and the drive-by media, as someone else calls them, you see all their guns firing at the same time. You said, okay, now, obviously, they all were waiting for a green light. They got it. And they're making these pronouncements with total abandonment of our normal processes, the way we do things. And as was stated in the show just before ours, this is, when you get down to it, no state has been officially declared yet. And that right there is the crux of this. And something to add on to what you just said, Michael Pelka in the previous hour also notated, who was it? Whoopi Goldberg, the Queen, and her statements from the platform that she occupies, the pulpit that she occupies. And it just makes you ill when you stop and think there's still millions and millions of people in the country who will take their news, they will take an opinion that's put out by someone like Whoopi Goldberg, and they'll take it to the bank. They have done no research of their own.
I'm going to get her on maybe next week. There is a woman that I met just...
Whoopi Goldberg?
No.
Oh, sorry.
No. A woman who, and I might have mentioned it, now I never know if I said it to you or if I said it on the air, but a woman that I met just on Saturday, and she had been basically I mean, drinking the Kool-Aid of the mainstream media. And in February, when they came out on one of those first press conferences regarding the coronavirus, and she saw them standing there saying, this is highly, highly contagious, without masks, standing next to each other, she's going, wait a minute, I'm not sure they're telling me the truth. And at that point in time, Steve, she started to dig into what was going on, and she moved from being a Democrat, supporting the Democrats, to she was wearing her Women for Trump mask through the airport when she traveled recently. People, when they start to search for the truth, and that's what we do every day here on this show, good things happen. And a couple of things. Oh my gosh, I got to get us, stay us, keep us on time. And we'll talk about this maybe tomorrow. But AOC wants to cancel all those who work for Trump. Can you believe this? These people that say that we need to be inclusive and tolerant and that we need to unify, they're saying that if you are a supporter of Trump, they basically want to take away people's livelihoods. You talk about bias and prejudice. I find that absolutely astounding, Steve.
You look at in the dictionary for, the definition of two-faced, and you'll see her picture there talking out both sides of her mouth at the same time. And what kills me is like the icing on that cake of, you know, this bomb that she dropped was, I'm getting so frustrated, I'm just going to quit politics. And I'm thinking,
please,
please.
Hey, one other thing I wanted to mention. Yesterday we had on a Representative Dave Williams here in Colorado. He was had put his name forward as the assistant minority leader for the party, and he and Kevin Van Winkle. They did not win that election. Hugh McKeon was elected as the minority House leader and Colin Larson as the assistant. I know Colin. I've not met Hugh. I will reach out to them. But typically, their policies have been to work with these Democrats versus challenging them. And we need to come in behind them and encourage them to stand up against these Democrats. And we will congratulate them, Hugh McKeon and Colin Larson. And we need to stay connected with them as we are moving into the next legislative session that will open in January. Before we go to break, I want to mention one of my great sponsors, and that is Hooters Restaurants here in Colorado. I'm going to go over, I'm in the mood for fish and chips, and that's one of the things on their lunch specials. But they have all kinds of specials. They have five locations: Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. They have football specials on game day, dine-in specials, as I mentioned, lunch specials. Wednesdays are Wings Day, all the wings you can eat for $15.99. Go to HootersColorado.com for more information. That's HootersColorado.com. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we will be talking with Alfredo Ortiz. He is the president and CEO of Job Creators Network, and he is leading he's in the defense of small business from the onslaught of bad government policies, and he's been busy. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You will get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast and our most recent op-eds. Go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. I am thrilled to have on the line with me Alfredo Ortiz. He is the president and CEO of Job Creators Network, where he has been leading the defense of small businesses from the onslaught of bad government policies. Alfredo, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kim. Good morning. Thank you so much.
You've been busy, This is a tall order, because I continue, particularly, I don't know if you're watching what's going on out here in Colorado, but there is just a continual barrage against small businesses. It seems that many bureaucrats and politicians think that small businessmen are super rich with this big pot of gold that government can access. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, Kim, it's so true. And that has just been the case, at least for, you know, I've been running Job Creators Network now for almost 7 years, and that's just constant. And we saw that under the Obama-Biden administration. Things had reversed, truthfully, under the Trump administration. He understood what it was like to be a business person. You know, he knew how important a lower tax, a lower regulation environment is for small business to succeed. And I have to tell you, you know, should these results stick and we do have a Biden-Harris administration going forward, I'm concerned once again, as I was under the Obama-Biden administration, for small businesses, because they just don't get it. For example, you saw Joe Biden say, of course we're going to raise the $15 minimum wage. That won't hurt small businesses. It will help them. And I'm sitting there go, really? I mean, like, what environment? Right. And you know, I actually, you know, testified under a couple of congressional committees, and we had witnesses there that were members. And you would see the way these professors would talk about it. They obviously had no clue. They had never run a small business, never signed the front of a check, let alone in some cases back of a check, other than the ones that they were getting from their nonprofit groups. They just don't know how to run a business. And they would literally say, you're rich. And exactly what you just said, they would say, you're rich. You can afford it. And I would love that. I have to tell you that we had that witness that I'm telling you about. And he turned to that professor and goes, look, I'll make you a deal. How about you come to my offices? I'll bring my CPA in. We'll open the. If you can find where I can afford this, then I'll get it done.
You know what I think, Alfredo, many times is these, I call them PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties. They look at a gross revenue number. And they think that that is the profit that a business has. And they don't understand that you have to take out all the expenses, all the costs of doing business.
Yeah, they don't.
And
they
then
don't get that.
You get that small percentage. They have no understanding that once you chip away at that small percentage, ultimately, this could put some of these businesses out of business.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, one of the things, a few years back, we did an interesting thing. We actually did a small research project where we polled the cashiers of a large franchise. It was a Burger King franchise, just so you know. But that doesn't really matter, because the question asked the cashiers is, of every dollar that's taken in at the register, how much do you think the owner of this restaurant takes home? And you know what the answer was, Kim? It was 65 cents.
Wow.
They truly believed that 65 cents of every dollar they were keeping. You know what the answer is, right, Kim? It's 2 to 3 cents.
Yes.
It's 2 to 3 cents. And so, you know, the break from reality to perception is so big. You know, we have a program at Job Creators Network called the Employer to Employee Education Program to try to help employees understand the realities of what it's like to run your small business. And stuff like this, where you educate them, it's just so critical. But, you know, it's not only educating the employees, it's educating these politicians. Now, I guess, if it's President-elect for Biden, if that sticks, it's from educating him all the way down to this Democratic Congress, because they just don't get it. They just don't understand. In energy, for example, the stuff that they're proposing in energy through the Green New Deal, one of the biggest line items for small business owners, especially, for example, in restaurants and other hospitality, you know, pieces like hotels and stuff, is actually electric costs. I mean, it's a big component of their line items, of their expenses. And so, you know, having those expenses go up, it's just between that and the minimum wage and the regulations. I mean, it's killing them. I mean, we know what's happening right now with the whole COVID and the shutdown. I mean, that has pretty much killed New York City. The estimate, Kim, is that in New York City, about 70 to 80% of the eateries that existed pre-COVID may be out of business by the end of the year.
And that was what really wanted
the impact of all those jobs.
Yeah, that was really one of the really fun things about New York City. I used to go back there quite often, because I'm a small business person as well and been in the ladies' clothing industry. And so I would go back as each of the seasons would open. And it was always fun and always exciting to find a new little eatery. I really have no desire to go back to New York City right now with what's going on with de Blasio and the big overreach of government there. And it seems to me that some of these PBIs don't even really care, Alfredo. I don't understand that.
You know, I really believe that. You know, I heard a very, very smart person that I got to know over the past years in D.C. He made a comment to me, and I think it kind of has stuck with me since then. He said, you know, the reason why actually Democrats don't really care in like small businesses is they can't corral them like they can large businesses.
Oh, you've nailed it.
It's so much easier to work. Right? It's so much easier to work with two or three big banks than a lot of small little independent community banks all over the country. And I just really believe that, and especially that spirit of entrepreneurialism that makes, you know, American capitalism so wonderful, right? It's just that desire to you know, work hard and be anything you want. They don't like that. They like controlling big business, right? Big government loves big business, truly.
Alfredo, you have nailed it. And as I've looked at this whole COVID-19 thing, when out here in Colorado, when we've seen that the governor has said the big businesses are essential and your mom and pops aren't so much, or we're going to choose which ones are. And
right.
And I've thought about this, the idea of a big, big middle class, which that is what the entrepreneurship is of America, yeah. This middle class, that has really been under assault through big government policies. And then we saw it big time here with the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Kim. I mean, it really is like, you know, the super elites, or really the what I call, you know, the hardworking, you know, hourly workers, et cetera. I mean, it's that development of the middle class. You know, we love the idea, for example, of people who are maybe, you know, working or salaried employees or something that have this dream that go, you know, I want to own a franchise. I want to own something that I can call mine and work really hard and make it what I want it to be with my rules and my hard work. I had a small business too, Kim, myself. And so you and I both know what it's like to have that and the stress and the pressure. But you know what? We chose to do that because we wanted to do more, right? We want to achieve whatever we want to achieve, right? And I'm not saying that you have to do that, right, that we have to always want more. People want what they want. But the ability and freedom to choose to do that is what I love about this country, right? I'm a son of immigrants. My mom was a housekeeper. My dad was a tailor, right? It was all about hard work. Right. And a belief in education. And I was fortunate and blessed enough to have a great education and do so much with my life thanks to the hard work of my parents. But, you know, that's what they believed in. And I believe in entrepreneurialism. That's why I started my own business. But again, Ken, you and I both know, you know, I had employees. Boy, that Thursday, 2 weeks, every 2 weeks, I knew I had to have payroll filled. And sometimes, you know, my account receivables weren't coming in. And I guess what? I had to go to my line of credit. I had to do drawdowns, whatever it took. But I would pay my employees, right? And yes. I put everything on the line for me. I would mortgage my house. I would, you know, put myself in debt, right, for my business because I believed in myself and I believed in success and I believed in hard work, right? And that's what I think makes this country beautiful. But to then have government really try to really almost get in the way of all of that, I think it's what, to me, it just makes me honestly sick to my stomach. And we're going to be fighting a tooth and nail if it does become truly a Biden-Harris administration. Kim, I can promise you this. We are going to be fighting a Job Creators Network every single day like we did in the Obama-Biden administration.
Alfredo Ortiz, this is the work that needs to be done. It is so great to have you on the show today. You have about 30 seconds. What is the final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Look, anybody who's interested in the beautiful American dream that this country really represents, please go to jobcreatorsnetwork.com. You can find more information about what we do and the work we do there. We have over 500,000 members. We continue to grow. And I really, truly believe that united, we can actually, you know, keep America, America.
Okay. Well, I'm with you in this fight, Alfredo Ortiz. And so let's stay in touch.
All right, I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks so much. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. You are an entrepreneur, and you appreciate small business. You work with all kinds of people that are working to create wealth, hence your name, Presidential Wealth Management. Yesterday was a crazy day in the market, yes?
You know, it certainly was, Kim. The Dow started off up about 1,600 points, I think almost 1,700 at one point, and that that gain started fading late in the day, and we ended up still very strongly, about 800 points on the Dow. But I'll tell you, the NASDAQ, which had been up earlier in the day, turned around and actually ended up down almost 200 as profit taking came in. And this morning we've kind of got a real mixed bag here, Kim. The Dow futures are up about 170. NASDAQ futures, however, are down about 170. And I'm not sure what the explanation for that is, except that there's some fear that, you know, the Democrats are going to try to break up the big tech companies, which I find really preposterous since the big tech companies have been their biggest supporters, and I would think that that's very, very unlikely to happen.
That is fascinating. Huh. But why would that affect NASDAQ more than the Dow? Why would that?
Well, because most of your big tech companies trade on the NASDAQ, your Apple, your Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, you know, you go right down the line. These companies are the biggest weightings in the NASDAQ index. So when technology's having a tough day, usually the NASDAQ is having a tough day, but it doesn't mean that the Dow is.
Okay, okay. I was thinking a lot about what we had talked about yesterday, and here we are. What is this? November 10th. The end of the year is right around the corner. We don't know for sure what is going to happen with these election results, but we do know that there are two different, totally opposite ways that things could go. Biden has said he will repeal the Trump tax cuts, and just him saying that, I just had mentioned that did come across the wire that Nancy Pelosi will not say that she denounces socialism. My friends, there are things strategically you should do between now and the end of the year to probably do some defense. And I think that people should reach out to you because I think you're going to be really busy between now and the end of the year, Jason. And I think people should reach out and do some discovery right now because every dime that you don't have to pay in taxes is a dime that you don't have to go out and earn again. And I just think that's a really good idea. I came up with it myself.
You know, a good idea, too, to take advantage of hopefully lower tax rates before that changes. Take advantage of very high prices in the markets while you still have a lot of uncertainty, which is very, very unusual. You know, again, Kim, when you get down the road a bit to retirement, what you're most worried about is getting a paycheck every month, just like you are now. Hopefully, while you have a job. And I think that it's very wise if you have all of your money or almost all of your money just invested in conventional, stock market type investments to maybe look at things like some safe annuities, other income alternatives, to try to assure that you continue to get that paycheck even after you're done working, because that's really what it's all about.
For sure. And you are a specialist in that. Jason McBride, I'd recommend that people give you a call at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason, we will talk to you tomorrow morning.
That sounds great. You have a good show, Kim.
Okay, thanks so much. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we will be talking with Orson Swindle. He is a decorated Vietnam prisoner of war. He was the commissioner of the Federal Trade Commission. And he also served as Assistant Secretary of Commerce during the Reagan administration. You will not want to miss this interview. We will be right back.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
And happy birthday to the United States Marine Corps. This is Kim Munson. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well. And go over to Facebook and give us a like also. We will hopefully be talking with Orson Swindle here in just a few moments. He's a decorated Vietnam prisoner of war. He was the commissioner of the Federal Trade Commission of the United States from 1997 to 2005, and he had previously served as Assistant Secretary of Commerce during the Reagan administration. And he was a Marine, and he flew Crusader fighter jets, and he had flown, I think, over 200 sorties. And on November 11th, 1966, he was shot down over North Vietnam. And he was in a POW prisoner of war camp for over 6 years. I think it was about 6 years and 4 months. And I met Orson. There is a group of Marines that I've come to gotten to know up in, they meet in North Denver, and it's Cooper's Troopers. Grady Birdsong has really become a good friend of mine as well. And they're a group of Marines that meet once a month. Of course, with the whole COVID-19 thing, it's been a bit crazy, and they have not been meeting as often. But they have six still Iwo Jima World War II veterans who I've had the great honor to interview. And anyway, I was up at one of the luncheons one day, and this gentleman tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, I was a prisoner of war with North Vietnam for 6 years and 4 months. I'm like, okay, we need to talk. And that was Orson Swindle, and I actually have interviewed him several times. And the torture that these guys went through was so significant, but they don't really dwell on that. And actually, Orson did share a cell with Senator John McCain for some time. But I wanted to just mention to you, he said that today is also National Donut Day. And Orson sent over some information to you, to me, and this was in 2004. This was by Orson's wife. She says, as most of you know, my husband Orson was a prisoner of war in Hanoi for 6 years and 4 months. And ironically, he was shot down on Veterans Day, November 11th, 1966. He was flying his 204th mission, what was to be his final scheduled mission before coming home. As you well know, being a POW is a tough experience, but POWs also have some funny stories to share, and the following is one of them. In September of 1969, after Orson had been a prisoner of war 3 very hard years, and the early years were the worst, Ho Chi Minh had died. Orson was at Son Tay prison camp with about 55 other men. One day in October, he was escorted in for an interrogation, which he said was more of an English lesson for the interrogator as opposed to one of the beatings they received when Ho Chi Minh was calling the shots. The interrogator began by bragging about his country and its 4,000-year history and belittling the USA, saying, "Your country is very young. It doesn't even have many heroes or holidays." Knowing that the Marine Corps birthday was coming up in November, Orson began to spin a story. He pretended to take umbrage, saying, no, you are quite wrong. We have many holidays in our country. As a matter of fact, one is coming up very soon. The interrogator began taking notes. And Orson continued. He said, there will be festivals and children will dress up in costumes, and it's very important to us. The interrogator became more interested. So Orson continued his yarn, saying that the famous holiday was called National Donut Day. Now, before you can really appreciate this, you need a bit of background. Before Ho Chi Minh's death, the POWs were quite emaciated. They were eating mostly rice and swamp grass soup, as they called it, and sometimes pumpkin soup. Orson says they estimated that he weighed a little under 120 pounds, and she said that now at this point he weighs 225. At shoot down, he was something like 195 and 6'2", so this was quite thin. I mean, my friends, can you really imagine that? A 195-pound man was now weighing in at 120 pounds. And the men were hungry all the time, very hungry. A couple of times a year, they would get what they considered an incredible treat. It was nothing more than a small piece of old French bread that had become hard and moldy. The prison camp cooks would deep fry it and sprinkle it with a small amount of sugar. And among the POWs, they called the results sticky buns, and to them, it was manna from heaven. The interrogator asked, what is a donut? So when explaining National Donut Day, Orson told his interrogator that donuts are a lot like a small piece of bread you occasionally give to us. He explained the sweet bread, the donut, is celebrated on November 10th, National Donut Day. Everyone has one of them or more of them. Not sure what the outcome of his spoof might be, Orson was sent back to his cell where he immediately started tapping through the wall to the other POWs, saying, hey, guys, you got to back me up. I just invented a new national holiday, and if the Vietnamese find out I was pulling their leg, there will be hell to pay. Tell all the guards that National Donut Day is on November 10th, and don't let me down. Pass it on. A few weeks went by, and to everyone's great surprise, on November 10th, the POWs at Sun Tay Prison, well known for being a really bad place, and also for the unsuccessful Special Forces rescue attempt in the fall of 1970, the POWs had been moved. They were served a small piece of bread, a sticky bun, and Orson was the hero of the day. Orson had forgotten all about this story, and she had never heard it, his wife, until a fellow POW, Bob Sturm, a United States Air Force colonel and good friend, was interviewed in a San Francisco paper, and in it he described the origin of the National Donut Day. And she said she accidentally came across the story, and then Orson told her more. So please, she said, come by my office for a donut and help me celebrate the Marine Corps' birthday and Veterans Day. So today is National Donut Day, my friends. You may go to your favorite donut place, and you may want to get a donut in honor of what happened with Orson Swindoll on that day back in when he was a POW prisoner. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue on with these stories about Orson Swindoll.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Happy birthday, United States Marine Corps. This is Kim Munson. You are listening to The Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. Before we get to Orson Swindle, I wanted to give a shout out to Castlegate Knife and Tool. They are located right there in Sedalia, Colorado. It's a great little town. Such a piece of Americana. They're open 7 days a week, and they have knives from the best blade makers throughout the world. Whether or not you're a collector or a sportsman, or you need a utility knife for the house, or a military personnel, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place to go for that next knife to add to your toolkit. Be sure and check out their website. It is castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. And as we're getting into the holidays, a wonderful knife is a great thing for one of those hard to buy people on your gift list. On the line with me is Orson Swindle. We had a little technical difficulty, Orson. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Kim. I spent a whole career in the Marine Corps flying airplanes and being on time or earlier, and I screwed this up. Well, on the Marine Corps birthday, I'm doomed.
Oh, my gosh. Well, while we were getting everything lined around, Orson, you had sent this over to me yesterday regarding National Donut Day. And I had emailed you back that my very first job was at Daylight Donut and Chicken Inn. I didn't realize what a patriotic thing that was. And I actually had relayed the story that your wife had written regarding how National Donut Day happened. So that's where we're at right now. Just kind of finish National Donut Day up for us, because in the piece it said that you had gone back, you'd kind of spun this yarn, and you tapped on the wall to your other prisoners, back me up. But you were a real hero that one of those, well, I guess it was November 10th, right?
Well, yeah, it was November the 10th. And as we used to say, each day is a small victory. And I got called in for an interrogation after the death of Ho Chi Minh, which was mid-September of 69, if I remember correctly. And I should remember something like that very specifically. But anyway, it was just an English lesson, and this interrogator, rather arrogant jerk, started just going on about how they have this 3,000-year history and so forth, and we have no culture and no history in the United States. And I said, au contraire, you know, just off the top of my head, I said, you're absolutely wrong. We have many cultural events. In fact, one's coming up here very soon. And it's November the 10th, and that's National Donut Day. And I'm just spinning this yarn right off the top of my head, and he looks very quizzical. And he said, what's a donut? I said, well, you don't have anything like a donut. It's very unfortunate. And then I started to describe National Donut Day celebration as sort of a big Oktoberfest, German festival with lederhosen and oompa bands and all that stuff. And he's copying all this junk down, and he said, well, I still don't know what a donut is. I said, well, you know, once in a while, you folks give us some old moldy bread that you dip in grease and put sugar on it. I said, that's the closest thing you've got to a donut. And, of course, I was speaking in terms of the 10th of November, which is a Marine Corps birthday. And he wrote all this stuff down. So I go back after the interrogation, or the quiz, as we call them, and tapped on the wall and told my friends, I said, you know, for God's sake, back me up on this one, because I really spun a yarn. And lo and behold, about 6 weeks later, when they opened the doors for us to empty our latrine buckets and all this stuff, they had out there a basket of this moldy, like French bread, just moldy bread fried in grease and sugar sprinkled on it. So everybody in the camp knew that I had just tricked the Vietnamese into celebrating the Marine Corps birthday with us. So, I completely forgot the story. And then Angie sees this story written up out in San Francisco somewhere, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
But
I'm going to have a donut today in honor of National Donut Day and the Marine Corps birthday. And that had to be a real shot in the arm. Now, you were a prisoner of war 6 years and 4 months. And Orson, I want to put this in perspective. You said, I think, that your son was 4 years old, 5 years old when you went off.
He had just turned four when I left, and had just turned 11 when I got home.
That's
a long time.
That is astounding. Did you have any contact with your family during the time you were a prisoner of war?
Not until the last year. It's not to say my former wife, she wrote countless letters and sent pictures and stuff like that, but I never got them, was very common. A handful of people got mail, and for no specific reason why they picked them out to let them get mail and others not, but I was one of the ones that didn't get mail. And then after the Sante raid in November 1970, just after the beginning of 71, I think I saw my first letter, and I think the letter was 4 years old. But I had essentially no contact. I was listed as missing in action, probable captor, and, that's just the way it was. There were dozens and dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of us in the same boat.
Okay. Now, the Sante raid, was that the first prisoner of war camp where you were at, Sante?
No, I was in like 17, 18 different locations. I came back through different camps, but basically Sante was a remote camp set up by the Vietnamese about 22 kilometers from Hanoi and out west, and they had about 56 of us in this camp. And we were pretty isolated, and our reconnaissance drones picked up this prison site. It was a wall like a fortress, and from that came the plan to go in and try to evacuate us from rescue us from camp. And unfortunately, we'd moved a couple of months before they got there.
But you saw, so are you over in Hanoi then when the
Yeah,
the raid...
we had been, actually, no, we weren't, we were on the outskirts of Hanoi. We had been moved to a camp, ironically, as I said, Ho Chi Minh had died in 1969, and this was 1970, early fall. And they had started cleaning up the conditions that we were living under, and I think international pressure was coming down on them, so they had created this new prison camp. It was like an old barracks, and we were over there, and all hell, there had been no bombing up there for almost a year, and all of a sudden all hell breaks loose, and we look out of the windows in the building we were in, and we could look over in the direction where Sante was because we knew where it was. And lo and behold, we see the afterburners of F-4s, the only twin-engine fighter plane in the war. And we knew it was our guys, and we knew probably what they were doing. And unfortunately, we were just sitting there watching.
Well, Orson, when we first met, you had mentioned just a little bit what the torture was, and I always like to be really careful about these questions. Is there anything you could just share with our listeners so that they could get an understanding? Because most of you guys don't talk about it, but is there anything you could explain to our listeners what they put you guys through?
Well, to give you my mental way of coping with some of it, I used to pretend that when I was being tortured and beaten, that it was just like playing football against the Green Bay Packers. You were just getting hit a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But they use ropes, tourniquets, beatings, incessant beatings, a lot of mental pressure through interrogations, although we coped with that pretty well. They weren't that sharp, in our opinion. But we lived in isolation. Some guys spent 3 and 4 years in isolation. Now, not total isolation, because we had covert communication by tapping through walls. But the beatings were commonplace. The ropes, the pain from tourniquets on your arms pulled out of socket, and the shoulders, and things of this nature were just commonplace for all of us. I went through nothing particularly special. It was just it was the standard fare of how they treated the prisoners. They were brutal, to put it mildly.
In one of our interviews that we've done, you told a story about being interrogated, and you realized that they wanted names. And at that point,
right. You
started to give names of your football team. Tell our listeners about that story.
Well, you know, they initially captured me immediately. They were waiting them when I got on the ground. I was way down in the southern part of North Vietnam. And I went through some really harsh beatings, trying to avoid giving anything but name, rank, serial number. We found out real early that wasn't going to work. We had to come up with lies. And so they always taught us, when you lie, never tell a lie without it being something you can remember. So they want to know who's in my squadron. And I gave them my high school football coach and assistant coach with the commanding officer and the XO and the starting football team, offensive line and backfield were the pilots in the squadron. And when I got home after all those years, 7 years, they had a big day for me. I grew up in a small rural town. And I was talking at a ceremony, and I was talking, and I looked over, and sitting over there in a group were about 8 or 9 of these guys. I said, by the way, I just want to let you know, don't you ever go to North Vietnam, because they're looking for you.
I've always thought that was such an amazing story. Now, you shared a cell with Senator John McCain. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, John and I, of course, knew who he was. I knew the McCain family. If you're a Marine, you know Admiral McCain was a staunch believer and supporter of Marines. But John and I met briefly, tapping on a wall, when they had moved us all into the big prison, by the way, after the Santé raid. They were afraid that the next raid would get a bunch of us out, so they moved us all into this big old French prison called Wallow. We called it the Hanoi Hilton in a generic sense. And John and I tapped, we were communicated, and we were tapping through the wall, and then we would subsequently be moved as troublemakers with about 25 other people under the leadership of Colonel George Day, who was a Medal of Honor recipient. And we were moved and isolated, and then John and I wound up sleeping side by side when they finally moved us back into the big camp a number of months later after our punishment. And we spent about 18 months sleeping side by side and talking about everything under the sun, and we became very good friends, as you might expect.
And did you remain friends throughout the remainder of his life?
Yes. He was a dear friend. I loved him like a brother, and we had our differences as we had in prison. We used to argue about things because there's nothing else to do but argue. As an old friend of mine down in South Georgia used to say, you shell the whole ear of corn, you know. You take every kernel. But we had our arguments, and we always laughed about them. And, he was a great man. I didn't agree with him on all of his politics, and we'd have arguments about that. But God love him. He's a good man, and in my mind, a hero.
Okay. Orison, we've got maybe a couple of minutes left. What other story, what other thing would you like to make sure that our listeners know about your military experience?
Well, it's not so much my military experience. You know, today is the Marine Corps birthday. That's very sacred in the lives of Marines. Tomorrow is Veterans Day, and it happens to be the day I got shot down in 1966. And all these things had a profound influence on my life, certainly, but I would hope that our people understand the sacrifices that have been made for all of us. You know, my sacrifices were minimal compared to so many others. But I fear we have roughly half the people in this country that don't know our history. They have no idea. Some of these protesters being interviewed, what are you protesting? The NFL players, what are you protesting? Their answers are just short of stupid. And we are not teaching our young people the things that we grew up with, the things that held me and my fellow POWs together, both individually and as a group, is belief in our system and recognizing its faults, but holding fast to those beliefs because it is the best form of government that's ever been created. And now we have people who want to change it all. I mean, they have no idea what they're doing. And I think it was Abraham Lincoln years ago, and I think he was 28 years old. I can't believe he's this smart, but he gives a speech at the Lyceum at Springfield, Illinois, and I think a debate with Douglas. He makes a comment about the concerns about how our country will fail. He said it will not fail because of an invading army that will cross our rivers and travel through our forests. It will fail because we commit national suicide. I'm paraphrasing here. Mm-hmm. But he said, we will start to give way to the the great things we have and forget the sacrifices that were necessary, and we will blow it. And I think we're very close to being there now. We better change our education system, because these kids are growing up with all these thoughts that are nothing more than the propaganda I heard in Hanoi, and they have no idea what they're doing. No idea what they're doing. So I'm concerned about that here at 83 years old. But I'm okay, Kim. I'm okay. It's always nice to talk to you. And I apologize, both you and KLZ, for me missing the call. But my phone went out. I got to get a new phone.
Orson, things work out. We were able to cover and give the story of National Donut Day, which is also known as the Marine Corps Birthday. And so we were able to do that, and it's such an honor to get to talk with you today. And then tomorrow is Veterans Day, so we are honoring veterans all day this week. Orson Swindle,
yeah,
thank you.
Think about those veterans. Every time you see one, go over and you can't hug them anymore, but go over and say thank you so much. And the term "thank you for your service," I think, is sort of shop worn, but just say, "I just want you to know how much I appreciate you." It means a lot.
Absolutely.
And I look forward to seeing you at Cooper's Troopers as soon as we can get back on track.
As soon as we can get back on track, for sure. So, Marine Orson Swindle, thank you so much. You're going to love our quote for today. It is, some people spend an entire lifetime wondering if they've made a difference in this world. Marines don't have that problem. So, my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. Through the rain and lightning, wandering